A very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 6th July 2021, Tuesday class. So we'll be continuing from this book, The Essence of Infinite Meaning, teachings on the adapted verse of the Sutra of Infinite Meaning. We are at page 290. Just relax body and mind, then we will have our usual half an hour of awareness-based meditation. We are off the light. Then you all can begin your awareness-based meditation. So remember what we used to advise you. It's very simple when you understand what this awareness-based meditation is all about. It's about maintaining awareness, that's all. No need to do anything, no need to know anything, but maintain awareness. So relax body and mind is the first support. After you relax body and mind, silence everything. Don't think, don't chatter, don't do whatever. Quiet down the mind. Maintain silence, then just aware. After you relax, you maintain awareness, means you don't think, you don't do anything, you just relax and maintain awareness, that's it. Then stabilize the awareness for as long as you can. Before you are trained, before you have the skill, most of the time, this thinking mind or mundane mind is very active because you don't have stability or spiritual faculties. The five spiritual faculties are not there. That's why you cannot develop the meditative mind. Instead, the opposite five mental hindrances are there. When you lack the spiritual faculty, mental hindrance take over. Mental hindrance are mind state that make you heedless, think along. It hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. That's why you cannot maintain awareness. So what you do is, whatever arise, they arise. May it be thought, may it be aggregates of mind, may it be contact of mind against the senses. Just silent, relax, and maintain awareness to understand what is going on. Through that silent mind's observation, you will understand many things. So whatever thought or heedless thinking that arise, just let it arise. The moment it arise, away, finish. Then another one arise, away, finish. Or whatever that come to your attention is whatever you can be mindful of. Just allow it to pass. So silence is the main criteria. Then you can be completely silent without thought. That is the meditative state. So initially, if it cannot arise, never mind. Just relax into every mind state. Whatever tension, stress, or mind state that is disturbing you, you just allow it to be. Do not try to resist. Do not try to do away with it or push it away. Don't try to focus or concentrate. No need. Just maintain awareness. To be aware, silent. Don't do anything. We are at the second paragraph. Name and form, or Nama Rupa, give rise to the six entrances or the six sand bases. So there's a note there. We go to the notes. So here, the footnote 42 explains six entrance also called the six place of sensation, or what we call sense bases. They are the six roots of the ear, the eye, the nose, the tongue, the body, and mind, or the six dust of sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and perception. The six roots are internal, as the sense bases are internal, while the six dust, they are outside, external sense object. Together, they are called the 12 entrances or 12 places. We call it the 18 sense rhyme. And these are the first two set of 12 sense rhyme. An entrance or sense base is is something that allow contact to arise. A place where something occur. When the six roots and the six dust can come into contact with each other to create the six consciousness, six type of consciousness, it is called an entrance. Actually, this is the Mahayana way of describing. I think it's a direct translation, so it's not so accurate when they use this English word of entrance. It's actually our six sense bases. Then we have the six type of sense data, corresponding sense data. Then we have a mind trapped inside. So this mind is capable of arising sense door consciousness. When all these three, the sense bases, receive the sense data and the consciousness is there, upon contact or consciousness with the sense bases and the sense data, it triggers. It's like a natural happening, like our physical experiment. The light bulb, the battery, and the switch. Once the switch is on, the light bulb lights up. So our sense door consciousness function in a way quite similar. When the mundane mind or the consciousness make contact with the sense basis, then we receive the sense object from external. These three, when they come together, we call it contact. So when there is contact, that particular consciousness will be triggered off. So when it's triggered off, like your eye, EYE, that is the sense basis. So when there is contact between eye and mind, and color, shape, and form with the light media coming in, then we can become conscious of what we see. So that's how seeing consciousness come to be. So this is the 18th sense rhyme, where there are six sense bases, six type of sense data, and six type of contact with the corresponding sense bases. So each and every one of these can trigger off the respective consciousness. That's why we as a human being can be conscious of what we see, what we hear, what we smell, what we taste, what we tactile feel and think. So this refers to the 18th sense rhyme. But in Mahayana, they call it the six entrances. And they say the six place of sensation and the six roots. Then also the six dust. They call this dust because they are the source of defilement. When you don't have wisdom, when you are not mindful and aware, every moment of sense or consciousness, every moment of contact, the mind will still will react because it doesn't understand what is going on. Without wisdom, the mind become deluded. Okay, we go back to the commentaries. So this particular section is a continuation of the earlier sharing, because we are going through the 12 link paticca samuppada. And like I explained to you all, here the author used the 3 lifespan type of explanation, similar to the Theravada tradition's commentary type of explanation. But the actual paticca samuppada is not the 3 lifetime one. It's the instantaneous one, which I have explained. So earlier on, we have the first 4 links, avijja, paccaya, sankhara. Dependent on ignorance, sankhara arise. Sankhara is mental activity, mental thinking, whatever that the mind can do. So that is the first 2 link movement. Then when you think, it's like you make contact with your brain, with your mind. So the brain and the mind is another organ. So when you make contact, it's like the other sense basis. Upon contact, that sense door consciousness arises. Is that mind door or thought consciousness arises. So that consciousness, when they arise, it is the 3rd link. That's why avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya viññāṇaṁ. Viññāṇaṁ is the pure consciousness before the contact go in, like the physics experiment. Upon contact, the light bulb lights up, means you become conscious. Depend on which sense basis, you can become conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you feel or think. That's why the thought consciousness is from memory, from the brain. So that one is the thought itself. That's why it's called thought consciousness. That's why thought is respond to the brain's memory. So when that one arises, it will condition the 4th link, which is Namarupam. Because the 3rd link is just the pure consciousness. Like the Buddha said, in the seeing, there is only the seeing consciousness. There is no one to see. So that pure consciousness, without the content, is the 3rd link. That is the Viññāṇaṁ. Or we call it the receptacle before the content goes in. But when the mind, through its memory, which are all the views, opinion, conditioning, and belief system, etc., or accumulation of experiences, good and bad, could be your scars of memory, your phobia, or whatever, when you act from there, it will condition you into negativity, because the whole of the memory is full of a lot of this rubbish, we call it, because they are not wisdom. They are experiences from the past, your views, your opinion, your conditioning, your memories, and also your belief system, your phobia, your insecurity, your fear, your sorrow, your lamentation, your unhappiness. Then of course there are also other type of memories. So all this is with the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. It includes your selfishness, your emotional negativity, and also your fear, your worry, your anxiety. So when you act with that, means you will input the content of consciousness based on what your memory carries. So this is why I always say acting according to memory is not acting at all. Where this is acting not following wisdom. Acting following the conditioning, the belief system, and all the rubbish inside there. is with the wrong view, with all the emotion, with all the views, opinion and conditioning, belief system, or we call it the thing that the individual carry, means from your memories, views, opinion and conditioning, and also belief system, or your views and your opinion, or your memory, your phobia, your scarcity, memory, insecurity, everything, your selfishness. So all this will condition you into negativity. That's why when you input the content from there, the memory, then it becomes namarupa or namarupa, which is the fourth link. So avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnana, the pure consciousness. Then you input the content, it becomes namarupa, namarupa. So this name and form or namarupa is the five aggregate of form and mind, the second aspect, which is the thought process, not the first aspect. If it's the three period of time, they will define it as the first aspect, where they say dependent on ignorance, you arise karmic consciousness. So that sankhara, they call it karmic volition, karmic consciousness. Then depend on this karmic consciousness, your last thought moment, it condition rebirth consciousness. So the third link, they call it rebirth consciousness. And because of that rebirth consciousness, it conditions the form and mind, the first aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind, means you are born into the next life. Yeah. Then after that, he said, because you are born into the next life, the form and mind will have the sixth sense basis. Then the sixth sense basis, you depend on that, you will have sense contact. Then sense contact will condition feeling. Feeling or condition craving. So the whole dwelling will be explained and described in that manner. Then until they become becoming, then take birth, another life again. That is over three lifespan. But as I explained to you all earlier on, if the teaching taught by the Buddha is something over three lifespan, then it doesn't serve much purpose. It's like a theory or a knowledge. It's not suitable for meditation or understanding. That's why when I did the cultivation, I realized the real Paticchasamuppada, the 12 link, is not like that. It is the instantaneous one. Then sometimes it's multidimensional. You may not finish the toll of the dwelling. It can just cut off and connect again. And then something else can take over. Then contact occur at many places. The first dwelling also has contact, ignorant contact. Avijja paccaya sankhara, there is contact, ignorant contact. And dependent on contact, that consciousness arises first, the sense door consciousness. But the content hasn't gone in yet. That's why there is the third link. And they cannot explain all this because to them, they are not in the meditative state. They don't understand. They cannot see. So the third link is very difficult for them to comprehend. It's actually very simple. Avijja paccaya sankhara. Sankhara is your mental activity, mental thinking. It's when you make that mental thinking, means you are trying to make contact with the brain, or with the memory. So that brain is an organ. So upon contact, the thought consciousness arises. So that is the pure vijnana. Then you input the content of consciousness like I explained just now through memory. That becomes the form and mind, namaru. That is the second aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind. And that is the thought. Yeah. So when you understand it this way, that there is no pre-life. It's instantaneous. That's why when you input the content, then this consciousness becomes what we call kusala and akusala. These are Pali term. Kusala means wholesome. Akusala means unwholesome. So whether it's wholesome or unwholesome depend on the content of consciousness, whether you have any understanding or not. If you don't have understanding, most of the content come out will be akusala, unwholesome. Unless when you have certain virtue in you, like you are very sincere, very kind, very generous, contented, very respectful, then you have a lot of loving kindness, great compassion, you know how to rejoice. So all this will enable you to have some form of kusala or wholesome content of consciousness. So the thought that arises, whether it's wholesome or unwholesome, dependent on that individual's understanding, conditioning, training, virtue. Most people has delusion, hardly any virtue. That's why you read the Abhidhamma, you will know there are a lot of type of consciousness, but the majority, they are from the unenlightened being, which are mainly akusala, unwholesome. There are some wholesome ones, but they seldom arise. Sometimes it's a mixture. Yeah, most of it is before you are enlightened, you have Sakkaya Ditthi, self-delusion. So that one is negative for you. That one is actually born of ignorant delusion. But then, even a person who is heedless or deluded, they may have some character which is very good, like they are very honest, they are very sincere, they are very helpful, they are very kind, very gentle. So that sincere mind trigger of the wholesome bhakti, kusala karma, kusala citta. So this is how the dwelling is being explained. So hopefully it will help you. If you go back, you listen to it again, then you read my that book, the blue book, Paticchasamuppanna, the transcript book. It's available on the website, Paticchasamuppanna. Then you will understand. I explain the whole thing there, the two aspects of the Paticchasamuppanna. Okay, we go back to the commentary here. Yeah? So form and mind or name and form give rise to the six sense bases. After the stage of form and mind, as we develop inside our mother womb, our six sense organ or six roots, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and mind gradually take shape. This one is talking about the fetus upon conception. People often talk about a child's prenatal education. Inside the mother, the fetus can feel its mother's happiness, anger, sadness, or joy. So the mother's personality will influence the child. On the other hand, some mothers generally have good tempers, but become bad tempered after they become pregnant. This is because the child's personality is affecting the mother. Mother and child have an affinity with each other, so their karmic consciousness will affect each other. For example, the mother of Sariputta gradually gained wisdom and started speaking with unhindered eloquence after she became pregnant and conceived Sariputta. This was because Sariputta's wisdom has influenced her. Next, the six entrances give rise to contact. When the fetus is replete with six sense organ and ready to be born, the child will come into contact with the world and connect with external sense object or sense data to create sensation. Then sensation give rise to craving. Then craving give rise to love and desire, which leads to grasping. As the volitional formation of ignorance continue, God's being gives rise to becoming, and becoming leads to birth, always sickness and death. Life after life, we never escape the dwelling of cyclical existence. So this is the reason why the author used this word, dwelling of cyclical existence, because they explain it over three lifetimes. Actually, the dwelling is not really cyclical existence. The dwelling is a teaching that explains to us clearly how we function as a human, how our mundane mind arises, how it functions. It's citta niyama, the truth of mind, the nature's law that governs the operation of mind. Mind is citta. So citta is actually the thought, the whole of the content of consciousness. That's why we have citta no pasana. We develop mindfulness of the thought, or we call it the content of consciousness. So the content of consciousness is what the thought is all about. Before the content went in, it's just the pure consciousness. Like the Buddha said, in the seeing, it's only the seeing consciousness. No containment, no one to see, no stirring, no reaction. Or in the hearing, it's just that hearing consciousness. Like a baby, when he see and hear, a newborn baby, there is no memory. There is no conditioning. There is no atta. It can see things as they are, without words, without concept. It see reality. Means the pure consciousness, the pure seeing, or that direct seeing. So if you can understand how the child really sees, then you will understand what that consciousness is. But the trouble with living beings is, as we grew up, we are so conditioned. We have our memories, our conditioning, so views, our opinions. So when we see or hear, we cannot do it like a child. Immediately, our mind will stir and react. We will interpret, we will perceive and input the content. That's why living beings become heedless, agitated. Then the dwelling straight away move. And sometimes it occurs so fast. From the first thing to the craving thing. Sometimes it even go beyond in condition grasping without you knowing it. You are already in that state of anger, hatred, or lust. So all this can happen very fast, especially when you did it so often, when it has become habitual tendency. So these are your habits. You become very mechanical. You get angry very fast. You get emotional, frightful, fearful very fast. So all this you will understand when you have mindfulness, when you are aware, when you silence your mind. You can see all this movement. You can see all this paticca-samuppada link. Then you can be at the moment of contact, at the moment of sense experience, at the moment of input of content of consciousness. You can even at the moment can be aware, can be, you can even be aware of the moment of perception, activity of mind, sankhara movement, and the arising of that consciousness. That your mind will be able to be at the moment of feeling. If you have the wisdom and the understanding, it will not condition craving because of your wisdom. Then feeling become pure feeling, non-grasping. Otherwise, it will condition you into craving, which is a type of grasping. And craving will again condition you into grasping or attachment, very strong craving. Then you become that. Then after that, you take birth. Means transgression. So all this is what the Paticca Samuppada is all about. Okay, we go back to the commentaries. Oh, we finished that first part. Huh? So, I'd like to recap. Huh? Here, the explanation of the dwelling as the cyclical existence by the author is because they follow the traditional commentaries of the Theravada Sutta. I think a lot of Mahayana Sutta also they accepted this explanation. Unless they are cultivator and meditator, they cannot understand. So this dwelling of cyclical existence is explaining the Paticca-samuppada over three lifetimes. That's why it's like cyclical existence. They continue. Yeah. But the actual one is different. The actual one is the instantaneous one. Every moment, every instant, it arises within our form and mind. So that one is the one that the Buddha is interested in. Under his Paticca-samuppada teaching, he teaches the second aspect where the thought is involved. Yeah. So this Paticca-samuppada or dwelling, they occur every moment, every instant. But you have to be very mindful. Your mindfulness has to be very stable to see all this movement, to understand all this. So this is the part where we differ from the author. Eh? So Megan Hope. Okay, I will move on to the next adapted verse. Things change constantly as thought after thought arises and ceases. The words used are the same, but sentient beings' understanding are different. The nature of Dhamma does not differ. But sentient beings move through the four states of existing. This sutta is true in word and principle and is supremely honored. So this is the new adapted verse. Eh? Then we will go into the commentary, see what they say. All things in the world are always changing, because we live in a conditioned world. That's why everything is in a state of flux, dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomenon. So this statement is true. All things in the world are always changing. One moment, the sky is dark, then the sun rises, brightness and darkness imperceptibly supplant each other. Thus, things change constantly as thought after thought arise and cease. Both positive and negative thoughts undergo the same process of arising and ceasing. The type of thought produced depends on the habitual tendency of each individual. See, she also knows. Eh? With positive tendency, wholesome thought will arise. With negative tendency, external condition will elicit unwholesome thoughts. Regardless of whether thoughts are positive or negative, each arises and ceases within the cycle of arising, abiding, changing, and ceasing, means the four-stage cycle. The Sutra of Infinite Meaning states, thought after thought arises and ceases. Therefore, good men, the beginning, the middle, and the present teaching use the same word, but differ in meaning. Because the meanings are different, sentient being understanding are different. Because their understanding are different, the Dhamma, the fruit, and the path they realize are also different. The Buddha gave teaching for more than 40 years, which he divided into the beginning, the middle, and the present period. During the early period, he taught the Four Noble Truths, the teaching that he first expounded to the five ascetics after attaining enlightenment. During the middle period, he expounded the dwelling of cyclical existence. Actually, the dwelling is just Paticca-samuppada, huh? And the sixth perfection. And during the present moment, the principles taught were all the same as what was taught previously. It was simply that for the Buddha to teach in accordance with people's varying capacities. He had to explain the meaning at different level in different ways so that each person would be able to understand. Therefore, the word used are the same, but sentient beings' understanding are different. For example, whether we talk about filiality with children or with adults, the principle, be failure to your parent, must be explained without a different tone and different language. To children, we must use simple concepts so that they can understand and follow along. For adults, although the principles are the same, that they can accept and understand, may be very different from the child. This is because adults have been contaminated by worldly habitual tendency and have already formed a fixed opinion of what filiality is. If we tell them to be failure, they may say, I'm very failure. I will take care of my parents and make sure they have a place to live and food to eat. Even if this is the case, does it really constitute filiality? Therefore, when discussing filiality with adults, we must bring out the deeper meaning to clearly explain the basic principle of being a good person. There is a story from the Sutra of Miscellaneous Treasure. In ancient time, in a certain country, there was a tradition which has been passed down from generation to generation. When a father reached 60 years old, his children or grandchildren would give him a blanket and he would be forced to sleep by the door of the house as the guard. In one particular family, one day the elder brother told the younger brother, "Father is almost 60 years old. Prepare a blanket for him." The younger brother left, and a short while later, he came back with half a blanket. The elder brother asked, "Why did you bring only half the blanket?" The younger brother said, "The other half is for the next person in line. You are aging too. When the time comes, your son can give you the other half of the blanket, so you can be the doorkeeper." The elder brother felt a deep sadness. He realized that being treated like this was very hurtful. So he asked his younger brother, "Should we treat our father this way?" To break from the tradition, the two brothers went to see a very renowned and respected wise man and expressed their heartfelt wish. This wise man agreed that tradition should be abandoned. So he pleaded with the king and finally gained his approval. With a single decree, the king abolished this tradition. We can see that even ancient traditions are not impossible to change. For example, the universal deliverance ceremony during the ghost festival held on the 15th day of the 7th lunar month. Is it really necessary for people to make ritualistic sacrifices? We often say all living beings in the world are our family, and in every place, those around us are our siblings, whether or not they are related to us by blood. Indeed, the true meaning of this universal deliverance ceremony is to universally love and protect all living beings. Depending on people's understanding, the same cultural traditions are practiced very differently. If we can open our heart, our mind, we can see that we do not need to attach to certain traditions. In the same way, because their understanding are different, the Dhamma, the fruit, and the path they realize are also different. But if we can verify the underlying principles and put them into action, we will certainly gain realization. The nature of Dhamma does not differ. The principle contained within the Sutra of Infinite Meaning point out a correct path of spiritual practice. However, in their everyday life, sentient beings move through the four states of existence. They are constantly experiencing birth, aging, illness, and death, formation, existence, decay, and disappearance, and arising, abiding, change, and ceasing. They are also bound by the four views, the views of self, the view of others, the view of sentient being, and the view of a lifespan. Thus, we remain attached even as things constantly change. In fact, everyone possesses an inner understanding of the nature of the Dhamma. As long as we stop taking issue with things and discriminating based on our views, we can learn to let go of our attachment. So this is the author's way of sharing. Then we will know this sutra is true in words and principle and is supremely honored. The word and principle of the sutra present the demeanor and bearing of sages, show us moral standards and virtuous example, and give us a legacy to pass on to future generation. They are truly the essence of all Dhamma and the source of our wisdom life. If we trace back the Buddha's teaching to their source, find it is no different from the true words and principle. When we mindfully look and listen, the Buddha's teaching shows us a moral standard of behavior, pointing out the right path for us to follow. As we cultivate our mind and live out the Dhamma in our actions, this is called virtue. If we can improve the quality of our character and uphold morality and virtue without going astray, then we will become role model. Since ancient times, all noble beings and sages have been replete with virtues. When we learn the Buddha's way, we must learn from their example. These sages are bodhisattvas. If we can learn to manifest the demeanor and behavior of bodhisattvas, we can move in the direction given to us by these teachings that are true in words and principle, and can penetrate the essence of all Dhamma, the source of our wisdom life. One gives rise to infinity. Infinity arises from one. The Buddha Dhamma is taught widely to universally respond to sentient beings. This is the profound, unsurpassed great vehicle, the sutra of infinite meaning that bodhisattva need to cultivate or practice. So this one is a very beautiful adapted verse. One gives rise to infinity. This one, by now, I think most of us can understand because of the conditioned nature of existence. So our mind is a forerunner of all things. When mind arises, all things arise. That's why from zero, the void, come one, the first thought of ignorance. Then it conditions thought after thought until infinity. That's why one gives rise to infinity. Then all this infinite creation, they started from one, the first thought of ignorance. So this Buddha Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha, is taught widely to universally respond to sentient beings' needs. This is the profound, unsurpassed great vehicle, the sutra of infinite meaning that bodhisattva need to cultivate. So this teaching from the Wuliang Yi Jing, sutra of infinite meaning, is very, very important, very beautiful. Now I will read the commentaries. Principles can be either superficial or profound. Of all the things in the world, with form, appearance, name, and quantities, how much can we really know or understand? The world transcending Dhamma has no form, no appearance, no name, and no quantities. So how much of it can we really know? Living in the world, we need teachings, such as the rules of proper behavior we follow in our daily life, such as being failure to our parents and doing good deeds to benefit others, engaging in meaningful work, being frugal and diligent, having proper etiquette and manners, and so on, are principles for living in this world. In our daily life, whether we are sweeping the floor, boiling water, or straightening up our environment or surrounding, everything we deal with involves these teachings of living in the world. So here, the description is all of the activity that you do. But there is one word that can describe all this in the Dhamma way. It's doing your right duty. Right duty with regards to the law of karma, the nature's law, the spiritual law that governs life and existence. So this right duty is right Dhamma. So they talk about good deeds and bad deeds, but it's actually your right duty. If you know your duty, if you have the Dhamma, you will know who are you, what are you, and what this form and mind is all about, and understand why you have to do your right duty, even though this form and mind is impermanent, little suffering, empty, non-self. But this form and mind is subject to karma. That's why there is a law of karma that governs life and existence. There's a moral causation. That's why we need to train our mundane mind to be mindful, to be aware, to develop the Dhamma understanding of what constitutes evil and how to follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, cultivate wholesomeness, and purify our mind. So all these are in the teaching. So when you have this understanding, you will know how to perform your duty very well. You will do what you need to do or what you have to do to avoid coming negativity and repercussion. So this part is an added understanding. For instance, there was an 80-year-old doctor in Tima who once participated in the annual conference in Hualien. He shared that during the meeting, he learned many rules, including how to sit properly. They were taught the way to sit down, where to place one's leg, and so on. He was relearning all of this. He felt that although he was already 8 years old, he did not really know how to sit, how to hold his rice bowl, and how to use chopstick properly. There were so many things that he did not know how to do. After he learned them, he felt very joyful that he could be as precise and graceful in his manner as everyone else. These are all ways of living in the world. Even though he had a wealth of knowledge and was advanced in years, he still need to relearn ways of doing simple things such as walking, standing, sitting, and sleeping. There is an old saying, live a long life, learn your whole life. So I think this one is a translation from the Mandarin. 活到老,学到老. Although we learn how to live in this world from the moment we are born to the moment we die, there is no way we can learn everything. It is even harder to learn the teaching that transcends the world. We live in such a vast universe containing a tremendous number of things and beings. Every object and every matter contains principle. So how much can we really know? The working of the world and its principle are already profound and hard to understand. But now, to realize that everyone has an inner Buddha nature and wisdom equal to his own, the Buddha had to repeatedly explain the way of transcending the world. He hoped that we might grasp the wonders of the profound Dhamma and know that this intangible principle has always been part of the intangible world. The way to transcend the world is all around us in our daily life. From our birth to old age to death, it is wondrous and inconceivable. Only the great enlightened ones of the universe, the Buddha, can explain how we came to be born and where we go after we die. This is the teachings of the dwelling of cyclical existence. With the Four Noble Truths, he helps us understand how our lives are inseparable from suffering, the causation of suffering, the cessation of suffering, and the path that lead to the cessation or ending of all suffering. Then he teaches us that by cultivating the six parameters of perfection, we can return to our intrinsic Buddha nature and develop our wisdom. He leads us from the way of living in the world to the way to transcend the world, from this shore to the opposite shore, and from knowing intangible and quantifiable appearances to realizing the intangible and infinite Dhamma. The Sutra of Infinite Meaning explains the principle: one gives rise to infinity, infinity gives rise to one. One can produce infinity, so once we have fully realized the Dhamma, which is without form, appearance, name, and quantity, we will naturally understand every phenomena that has form, appearance, name, and quantity. Once our wisdom awakens, we can understand all principles. Then we will know that tangible suffering and its causation actually originate from intangible ignorance and affliction. The Buddha Dhamma is taught widely to universally respond to sentient beings. During the more than 40 years that the Buddha widely expounded the Buddha Dhamma, he taught countless different kinds of Dhamma because he had to adapt to the countless nature and desire of sentient beings. This happened from the Agama to the Vaipuya to the Prajna period, until the time of Lotus Sutta, where he finally returned to the state of Avatamsaka that he reached upon his initial enlightenment. The Buddha continuously and repeatedly gave teachings. He widely expounded the Dhamma by using world transcending principles to help us understand the way of living in the world. This was all done in response to sentient beings in the hope of saving everyone from their affliction. This is the profound and surpassed great vehicle, the Sutra of Infinite Meaning, that Bodhisattva need to cultivate. Once we have resolved to engage in spiritual practice, we must work hard to study the Sutra of Infinite Meaning. The Sutra of Infinite Meaning is applicable for all sentient beings in the same way that space covers all of Earth. The universe is vast and the distance our eye can see is limited. So when we look at the sky, the color looks gray or blue depending on whether the day is cloudy or clear. In fact, what we see is not the true appearance, but simply an appearance formed by the rotation of the stars and planets and changes in the weather and air pressure. The atmosphere is invisible, and beyond it, the void of great invisible universe surrounds this planet and all things on it. This is the meaning of unsurpassed. There is no limit to how far it extends. The wisdom and the principle contained within the Buddha Dhamma have boundless breadth and infinite depth. Therefore, this is called the profound and surpassed great vehicle of the Sutra of Infinite Meaning. Okay, we finish here. So we'll stop here. So now we still have about 45 minutes. for our Dhamma discussion, meditation, reporting, and Q&A.
Yeah, good evening, Brother Teo, and all Kailamitas.
Yeah, good evening.
Okay, so I just shared a bit of my cultivation.
Very good. Sadhu.
The last sharing. So the other time I shared that I always fall asleep, right?
Yes.
So Brother Teo asked me to
maintain awareness.
To meditate before I go to sleep. Because normally I just go straight to sleep when I feel sleepy.
Yeah.
I did what you told me, and so normally every morning before I get up, so I just do a meditation.
Yes. The daily release.
About 10 minutes, about 10 minutes when my alarm clock rings.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I will do, I do 10 minutes meditation.
Yeah.
So I think it helps. I think it helps.
Oh, definitely. It helps to calm your mind, stabilize your mind, and make you mindful. Because when you do this awareness-based meditation, you are just being aware. Means no thought. Decondition your heedless thinking, so you are back in the heedful state of awareness, just aware. Even before you arise from your bed, the first instant you become conscious, always be aware of what? Your posture, aware of your conscious being. Then after that you can relax, maintain awareness before you rise. It can be for 10 minutes or maybe 15 minutes. Then later when you become very stable, you can do it for half an hour, 45 minutes. Sometimes if it's public holiday, you don't have anything to do, you are on your own free. If you are skillful, you can meditate for about 45 minutes to 1 hour, and it's very beautiful. Even half an hour is already very beautiful. Then your mind state becomes different. Then after that, whatever you do, the awareness is there. The mindfulness is there. So for what you have done, Elsie, you can describe how you experienced it.
So normally I just try to be aware about 10 minutes before I get up. So there was one time. So I was fully aware, so I think about 10 minutes, I just get up. So when I looked at the clock, it was about 30 minutes.
Yeah, time passes very fast without you knowing it. Because when you are in the state of awareness, it's like there is no psychological time because there is no thought. Or initially, very little or hardly any thought process. So this is very beautiful. Then you realize that is very good rest. Your body really become fresh, aware, clarity. Then after that, you become different. You continue. Yeah, continue.
Yeah. Mm. So I feel more composed.
Definitely.
My mind is more composed. Mm. Quiet, and when I do meditation, so I feel quiet and tranquil.
Yeah, tranquil. Yes, there are no thought. You are just being silent, aware. Then
and,
the state of mind that is without thought. Later on, you will see the big difference. Then you realize through this type of training, we call it the religious routine. You every day you can keep it, do it, and do it. Even for 10, 15 minutes, then it becomes half an hour. It's very good. You will become different. Then the first thing you can do is pay respect to Triple Gem, to develop the faith.
Yes.
So that is what I normally do. The moment I arise, I will mindfully face certain direction in my bedroom, near my bed. I just pay respect first. Then after that, I mindfully arise. Then how I move, how I do things, how I enter the washroom and do all the whatever wash up that we need. Then we also mindfully move around to answer nature's call. Then everything we do, we are mindful, aware, even washing our face, brushing our teeth, and gargling whatever water, then our hand movement, our activity, everything is mindful. Then whatever we see, when you move from the bed, how you arise, every moment, every instant with clarity. Then how you stand up, that's like standing up away, walking away. Then when you reach the door, how your hand open the door or move the door. Then how you go in, how you lock the door, if you have a habit to lock the door. Then all this you have to do with mindfulness. Then after that, what is the first thing that you want to do? Answer nature's call or whatever. And how you do it mindfully with clarity of awareness. If you start to do this, your daily mindfulness will come. Then everything become like very different. Your mind quiet, peaceful, aware, tranquil, still. So this is the outcome of the constant religious routine cultivation. That's why it can help cultivator. It can transform living being. And then you can sit in front of your altar. You see, you find that your space is limited. You can do it in a quiet place wherever you can. Then the best time is, of course, when you are alone in a particular confined area. So it depends on the individual. So sometimes the daily mindfulness can be carried out in the midst of life activity, like doing your household chores or whatever that you need to do. Then you still have to work. Nowadays, a lot work from home. You can also develop mindfulness and awareness. Your senses, you tend to be aware. You are not like an autopilot with a habitual tendency. Then you just habitually do things without any awareness within. So that is heedless living. So learn to be mindful. Everything you do, aware, mindful. How you answer phone call, how you look at a WhatsApp phone. Every movement, every activity is with awareness. Do it. Then this becomes your new way of living life. It will train you to be aware, to be mindful, to be heedful. And you do things differently. You are not excited. You will not panic. No matter what happens, you are calm. You are peaceful. Then the awareness is always there. Then with that clarity, you become very efficient. Then with the understanding, the Dhamma, you know how to make decisions. You will know how to act according to Dhamma way, which is following the Noble Eightfold Path, the essential Dhamma. So all this understanding will fall into place. Then when you have a good religious routine to meditate before you sleep, after you wake up, then in between, then also whenever you have free time, then daily mindfulness in between. So if you can maintain this type of routine, within 3 months, you become very different. Your cultivation become very different. Then your faith will drive you. Then you take the Bodhisattva vow. It makes the training even more strong, more elaborate. Then progress is definitely there. So all these are possible. You will start to see all this result, Elsie. What else?
Yeah, very much aware when I do my religious routine. I'm aware of the bird chirping.
Ah, yeah.
Then the alarm clock ringing upstairs.
Yes,
my washing machine. Finish washing.
Yeah.
Then the car passing by. All these.
All so, this is within your awareness.
Yeah.
Then you realize you are now more aware from inside out. It's no longer last time trapped in the thinking, the thought process, the memory. So now there is clarity, aware from the heart. From there, whatever that happened, the awareness is aware first. Then you want to know, want to perceive, the perception come in, the thinking come in. But most of the time, you don't need, you just aware, move. When, even the chipping of the bird, when you are aware, it's different. The word is not there. It's just that sound. I don't want to repeat that. That was just the concept. But the actual chipping, when you listen without word, without concept, without mind, it's just that clear perception of what that nature's happening is. That one is very beautiful. So that one is very like, with clarity inside there, then you can feel your heart area there, the awareness of it, just aware. You want to know, you can know. You don't want to know, you just aware. Then everything is like very beautiful. Then you become more and more sensitive. Then the first thing that you can hear is normally the very quiet, ear fan is very quiet. You can hear. Then the clock, the ticking of the clock is very clear. Then, of course, the aircon sound also very clear. Then sometimes, all of nature's vibration, they have their own vibration. So the morning, before the sky, actually, the twilight come in, you can be aware, actually. And I will know. By then, it's about 6 a.m. already. About to like the daylight is about to dawn. Then after that, you can sense, you become like more sensitive. You actually no need to have the clock around you. You will roughly know what time is it within the day or the night. Then that sensitive mind is very different. You can feel, you can sense. Then many things, you can develop understanding when your mindfulness is there. Then you will come to realize you are no longer like before, where a lot of thinking are involved, where the thought is very busy. So that thinking mind creates the what they call mundane activity, mundane living. Then the reaction and all those things, the habitual tendency, then the evil roots and all those things. Without mindfulness, you cannot see all this. But once you go through this training, you start to see, you start to understand where you witness the teaching within your own form and mind, within life itself. Then when you are able to be in that state of tranquility, stillness and awareness, you can insight into phenomena, you can awaken, and you can understand many things. Then you can see a lot of things that you never see before, because mindfulness has the ability. Last time, most headless people, they are lost in thought. They are hardly aware. That's why they have not trained. But once you have trained through this daily religious routine, you become different. You become more and more mindful, more and more heedful, more and more tranquil, quiet, peaceful, still. Then your life becomes different, your awareness becomes different. From heedless living, you transform into heedful living. And you will see the big difference. Then you will never allow it to fall back, because this is so beautiful. Then you become very sensitive, you can meditate, and you can feel your vibration within your whole body. Your breathing all become very clear. You don't need to use stethoscope or what. You just go about even your daily mindfulness. The awareness is there. You can be at your heart area anytime. When you have trained in the form of meditation, then your anapanasati, you have done it well. It's always there with you. You can hold your breath and be aware, just aware. Then the awareness is from within. So all these are very important understanding that only a cultivator who has gone through this training can understand. As I today, what you have shared is very good about the daily religious routine, the daily mindfulness training, and the cultivation. If you don't go through all this, you can never progress, because without mindfulness, like the Buddha said, the heedless are as if dead. So to train to be mindful in the midst of life is not easy. That's why I always advise you need a good religious routine, so that every day you can repeat it. That's why it's called a routine. Before you go to sleep, meditate for a while. If you are very tired, meditate on the bed when you are lying down. Unless you are really tired and need to rest, then you rest. Then try to maintain awareness. Then it will sleep, let it sleep. Then when you arise, it will be a good deep sleep. There are no thinking, no heedless thinking, no dream, no thought, nothing. Then you will be very fresh. You recuperate very fast. Then you can stay at the heart area or maintain awareness at your breath when you lie down. It's very good. Or when you sit, say whatever object of meditation, stay there, maintain mindfulness until it becomes very quiet, very still, until mind enters sleep. All these are training the mind to have stable mindfulness. Then when mind enters sleep, daily mindfulness will come. Then whatever you do, you are aware, you are mindful. Mind has entered sleep. Every movement, every activity is in sati. Every hearing is in sati. Smell, taste, tactile, thought process is in sati. So find out for yourself. Realize all this for yourself. So what I share is to cover the more extensive training so that you all can develop the understanding. When you go back and listen to all this recording again, you will be able to refine your cultivation of your daily religious routine type of training, leading to heedfulness, leading to the daily mindfulness, the stability of it all thing. Then you will transform. Then you realize when your sati or daily mindfulness becomes very stable, means the spiritual faculty are there. Whenever you sit, like a lot of kayamita they come to know, like, no need effort. The moment you sit, relax, awareness is there, and you can develop the meditative state straight away, tranquility and stillness. The mind is just like that. But throughout the day, you are already mindful, heedful, aware. Quite a number of kayamita can do, as shared by them, like Pocheng Leo, they can do. Even Song, Alicia, they all. Many of them can do. So your daily religious routine is very important. Okay, Elsie, you can continue.
My meditation is very relaxed. More relaxed and quiet. More relaxed and quiet, especially yesterday. Wow. 40 minutes, I was lying down.
Wow.
It was so quiet and tranquil.
Yes, you will learn a lot from there. You continue to develop it, make it stable. You can do for 30 minutes, 40 minutes initially is already very good. Then later on, you can do it for a longer period. Then that time, the time passes by without you knowing. Because it's so beautiful, you are so relaxed, peaceful, tranquil, and it can allow your body to heal, to recuperate, and become very mindful, very quiet, very still. So when the mind enters the sati, it's like that. It's with the true mind, the silent mind, not doing anything. That is the meditative mind. That is the mind that is sensitive and can understand, can meditate, can develop the understanding. So, sadhu to you, I'll say, you continue
yeah,
to
yes.
meditate. For 3 to 6 months, you will see very, very good result. Then you will become very different. Then your daily religious routine, you will never miss. So the other thing is to add to that respect. The respect is very important, the chanting. Share merit, transfer merit. Then after you pay your respect, every day when you wake up, pay respect, 3%. When you wash yourself ready, you come down at the altar there, pay respect again. Then
yes.
Before you go out, again, pay respect. Then when you come back, first thing is to pay respect. So you make it until it's a routine.
Yes.
And before you sleep, do the same. Meditate, pay respect, then share merit, transfer merit. Your life will transform, will improve, and become very different. This is what that training is. In the early days, I did this. That's why that time, throughout the day, I was cultivating. And I was, that time, quite young. I think I started in 1986, like what I told you, I went all out. So that time I was 32 years old. Then I was in the midst of career as a civil engineer. I got a lot of duties, a lot of responsibility, and my workload is a lot actually. But I was able to do it because I can see all this clearly, then I can simplify them. And I meditate a lot during that time. I have my religious routine throughout the day. I aware my and how I go to office. When I reach office, I'm always early. Then I will arrive, then get myself seated. All of my activity, how I go into the car, how I drive, and how I reach the office, how I park and how I come down, how I move my thing, how I go to office, all fully aware. Then how I enter my office with the key, and how I actually on the light, then get ready to do my meditation and religious routine. Then exactly 8:30, I will on my light, then open the door, and my secretary, they will know. They only come in after they see the light on. Then whatever, they will not disturb me until my light is on. So I normally reach office quite early that time, about at least 45 minutes before office start. So I will reach office normally between 7:30 to 7:45. And 8:30 is like my office start. We start at 8:30, we end at 4:30. So that time, it was in a very good environment where I was with a statutory body, a university. I was with University of Malaya. The environment, the nature, very beautiful. I like that place. I actually meditate a lot when I was there. And I like that workplace, that career, that environment. So it's meant to be. I was there for... I joined in 1982, I think. I left 89, 7 years. I was there for 7 years. When I was ready, 89, I left, early 89. I came out to the private sector. And then when I was with a consultant also, that phase is very beautiful. I tested myself. Then I was able to like merge my cultivation into the career life, into life itself. That was the most beautiful place. That allowed me to understand more things. Then I went the full length of my career. After that, I joined a corporate listed company to experience the corporate life. So I was with the Dhamma all the time that time. And I realized I can be mindful and aware in the midst of working, in the midst of living. Throughout the day, that mind was like that, the awareness, the mindfulness. So that experience is really beautiful. That's why Dhamma can be so beautiful. Ever since that day I started the intensive training, all this happened. That's why the daily religious routine I started commit myself in 1986. Then I finished everything before I left, I think early 89, and I left the university. So have faith, Elsie.
Yes, yes.
Continue to do, and I will guarantee you, you will actually progress and become very happy. It will become transforming, very transforming. It's also for other Kayamita. Don't underestimate this daily religious routine to develop mindfulness and heedfulness and awareness. These are simple activities that you do every day. But when you do with mindfulness, awareness, and understanding, and you are all the time in the meditative state, that's why the religious routine is very important. Make it a point to meditate.
Yes.
You start with chanting. Pay respect, of course, triple jam. Then you can do some chanting like Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddha. So whatever chanting that has affinity with the great beings, you can chant. Then after that, you compose yourself. You can follow Theravada tradition, Mahayana tradition, no problem. Then make it short and neat. Then you can end up with 5 percent like what we do, take refuge. Then,
yes.
Then do your renewal of the 5 precepts. Then after that, meditate. Whatever time, meditate. Then initially 5-10 minutes, nah, then 15 minutes. Then sometime when you become very good, half an hour is very fast. So last time in the early day, I remember middle of the night, I like to meditate before I sleep. Then when I meditate, because middle of the night very quiet, a lot of things is very favorable, very conducive. Then I realized my sleep become very different. I was fully aware. I wake up also fully aware, and my mind very calm, very peaceful. I hardly have any groggy type of dreams and all those things, and cannot sleep, no such thing. Every day is very beautiful. Then after that, when I wake up fully aware, first thing is awareness. Then I develop awareness of my lying down posture. Then I meditate. Then how I arise, how I do all those things. Then how I pay respect, triple gem. Then I go and wash up myself. Then I go to the altar. Then I do my religious routine. So all this, you can do it over a period of 3 to 6 months. Then it becomes a new routine for you. Then you can use that to cultivate seriously over the next few years of training. And you become very different. Okay, Elsie?
Sadhu, Bharatya.
Yeah.
So yesterday, my meditation, I said, first time I was so quiet, so tranquil. First time I did my lying down meditation at home.
It should have improved.
It feels good,
Yeah, you can become quiet very fast. Don't you go in.
Normally when I sit, I can feel my heartbeat.
Yeah.
I sit that when I sit sit down,
yeah.
So I can feel my heartbeat. My mind also settle down quite fast.
Yeah, very fast. Because when you can feel your heartbeat, you are aware there, you anchor your mind there. Then that mind which does not think, does not have sankara, become very quiet very fast. That is just aware of that movement. Yeah. Then it becomes very quiet. Then everything slow down. That's how you actually develop the understanding that our mind need awareness to regulate. Without awareness, it becomes heedless, lost in thought. run everywhere, create all the needless thinking and the habitual tendency. That's why initially you need to anchor it to something. So the habit is the best. The habit is not easy to feel. You must be mindful, sensitive, then only you can feel. That's why initially when you try, you have to develop the anapanasati or mindfulness training until the object of meditation becomes very stable, until your mind becomes very quiet, then mind enters sati. And when mind enters sati, or before mind enters sati, that stability of mindfulness is sensitive enough that it can actually allow you to feel your heartbeat without stethoscope, nothing. Then even those who do anapanasati, you aware very fast. Then you can be with that short breath or the subtle breathing straight away. And remember, after I become very skillful, the subtle breathing is always there with me. I am fully aware. Then I can be silent. Then later on, it falls to the heart area, remember. Then I stay at the heart area. Then the awareness and the pulsation of the heart become one. Initially, it was like very rough, pounding. Then I realized, wow, this heart without mindfulness and awareness pound very fast, like very violent. But when it is aware, the movement is regulated. It becomes different. Then it slows down until finally, hardly any movement at all. Like you don't breathe. But initially, you have to go through all this. Then when that awareness, activity, and sankhara, everything also cease, then there is only the silent mind, without thought, without any movement at all. And that is the best. When you reach that state, only you can realize the true mind, the silent mind, without any movement at all, without any sankhara activity at all. It's really still, tranquil, no movement at all. Of course, initially, when you realize that, the movement come back very fast because most people are curious. They don't know what this is, and they don't know how to appreciate what this thing is. But after you develop it, become more skillful and very stable, then this is very beautiful. Then you can find out the difference between that nature and the thinking mind. They are very close. The thought arises very fast. The moment when you are not mindful and aware, thought will come out already. Or it will go and think already from memory. Then upon contact, the consciousness, the content, everything moves very fast. Then you realize this is how things happen. This is how you function as a human being. Then you start to see the thing that you never see before, the understanding of what that nature is, and the mundane mind. The mundane mind is a movement from there. Then you realize this is what meditation is all about, which normal people cannot do because they are not mindful, they are not aware. So all these are very important understanding and pointer that only cultivator who has gone through all this training can understand and guide you and share all this with you. This is never written in any book. So far, I haven't read any book that write about this. So with all this understanding, you become very different. Okay, Elsie, anything else?
So the mind always, more aware, less thought, more clear.
Yes, you will experience them. Then stabilize that tranquility, stillness until it becomes very quiet, until no movement. And then you will know what that silent mind is, what that nature is, what that true mind is, completely without thought, without movement, without activity, without anything, just that tranquil stillness. Then it will like become very quiet and very still. Then it will like everything still slow down until like it starts to disappear. When it starts to disappear means you are going into that cessation. But that one needs a lot of wisdom. You need the understanding of Sankara Anicchang, Sankara Dukkang, Dhamma Anatta. Think also like that, don't think also like that. That's why the mind cannot think. The mind just relax, silent, still. Don't even have to maintain awareness, because the awareness also like you are with that nature. So no need to do anything. Just tranquil, still, just aware. Then after that, the awareness also slowly, slowly become more and more refined. Then it starts to merge with that nature. Then it ceases. So this is how cessation can happen. Enlightenment in the here and the now can happen. Then when you come out of it, especially first time, you will know what that thing is. Then no more sakayadity, self-delusion. You know that one never die, eternal life. The form of mind is not the true nature. The true nature is something else. But this true nature is not a being. It cannot come out and live. Like, it's not you. That's why it's anatta. But this one is not impermanent. This one is unconditioned, the eternal life, unborn. You will know all this. You will understand. So to go through all this is to experience the third number two. Cessation of form and mind is to be realized. Once you realize it, you will go through the transformation. You will become noble ones, enlightened beings. Okay? Today's sharing is very good. Yeah, sadhu.
Sadhu, Bharatiya.
Yeah, sadhu. Yes.
The last few weeks, I've been I study myself, what I've been doing with my cultivation, especially at this time when everything is inside quiet in the very chaotic world.
Sadhu, very good.
The one thing that comes to my mind was the word commitment, Bharatiya.
Sadhu. That's why the commitment comes from the sincerity. When you are sincere, you are committed. Then that one can drive you. And when you are sincere, means you understand the importance of committing yourself to undergo this type of training, to develop this Dhamma cultivation and understanding. Very good. That's why you look at your own cultivation, you reflect, you contemplate it, and you make use of this period of MCO or EMCO now to actually reflect and contemplate, which is very good, so that that commitment can come. Very good. So what happened after that?
It's like every day, like Bratio always share with us to do our religious routine.
That one very important. Yeah.
So now I commit myself to do the Bodhisattva vows.
Wow, sadhu. Very good. Then you will progress. You will progress. Sadhu.
Initially, I do it at night before. I noticed that I find that is not a very good way, because especially when I chant, I find that, you know, if I'm awake enough, then it's okay. But when I'm not awake, I find myself like one, the mind is like no more.
Yeah, doze off. You want to sleep.
Dozing off. So
it's okay. Initially, when you are tired, you need to sleep. You sleep. The other way is, you listen. The other way is when you are very tired. You make sure you are mindful enough to go down to sleep. So when you go down to sleep, when you are in your bed, all the movement and action, make sure the awareness follow. Then after that, you actually can sleep very fast. Because you are tired. Then you just relax, silent, you will sleep. If you sleep, let it sleep. Then later on, after you sleep, actually 1 or 2 minutes or sometimes 5 or 10 minutes, to you it like very short, but you recuperated, you become fresh very fast. Then during that time you maintain awareness, you become very different. Then you realize the tiredness no more. You only need 5 or 10 minutes of rest. Then your awareness come back. That is how you develop it. What you describe is very typical of most people who, when they reach that time to sleep, they are very tired already. But there are older people who cannot sleep too early on. Like last time my mother told me, she sleep too early, she wake up very early. 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, cannot sleep early. Then she got to wake up and do her own exercise and all that thing. Then for this type of people, maybe I teach them how to do, my mother's case, how to do chanting. Then I say, you need to listen to chanting, you listen. Otherwise, watch TV, I say, to maintain awareness and alertness. Well, my mother is illiterate. So when you are old, actually, you don't need so much sleep. They need very little sleep. Then they find it very difficult to sleep. So some people have this problem. But if you don't have this problem, then don't worry. You just follow what I advise you. Tired, need to rest, rest. But rest with awareness if you can. Then sometimes you allow your mind to rest completely, blank off also near my let sleep. But you make a pure intent to wake up within 5 or 10 minutes, means to be awake. Then during that short rest, you recuperate very fast. Then you realize that awareness once come back, you can meditate while in the sleeping posture. You can maintain awareness until you want to decide to let go of the awareness to sleep. Then it will just happen. Then you find that sleeping is no more an issue, no more a problem. You can just sleep. When you want to sleep, you sleep. When you want to maintain awareness, you can. So give it a try, huh, Biji?
Yeah, proud of you. Thanks.
Yeah.
As for my meditation, I have on occasions been able to sit very still. I plan for half an hour, but somehow I can sometimes sit too.
So you were saying, you were saying half an hour, then it turned out longer, isn't it?
Yeah. So I told myself I've been with Pratya for about 7 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've been listening to the Dharma. I think I've learned enough of
To cultivate.
I have to put in a lot more effort on the cultivation of sati itself.
Yeah.
Because without the sati, it's like everything is knowledge.
Yeah, You are right. Without sati, everything is Dhamma knowledge. Very true. Thought based.
Because like now when we read the books, we can understand. But I know that it's purely knowledge.
Correct. Yeah.
The initial wisdom has not arisen except on certain occasions.
Yeah.
But of course, it's so much better than what I was previously.
Definitely.
We all both we know how it is. How I was previously.
Correct.
So, I know that I've
Change.
The milestone is there.
Yeah,
I sincerely want to go further than that.
Yes, you want to move.
That's what I vow to do. I can in this lifetime.
Yes.
Pratya always emphasize, what's the point of coming if we do not create opportunities to do whatever we can in this lifetime.
Yes. Yes.
And also to create the good conditions for our future life.
That is most important. That's why you must commit yourself, determine, plant the seed of Bodhi, do the vow, then make the aspiration, evoke our merits, then do all the religious routine. Then this understanding will follow your life after life. Sadhu.
Yeah,
very
especially
good.
When we do the Bodhisattva vows, we
yes.
can see that it is not only for this lifetime.
Yes, not only for this life.
I have taken the Bodhisattva vows actually before Brother Teo, I joined Brother Teo's group. But at that time, I was so blah, Brother Teo, I don't even know what I was doing. But I could just commit myself thinking about it. Like, what on earth were you thinking? But
yeah,
I think
because,
you can go this way, Brother Teo.
Yeah,
I just want to tell a little story of how I think that I meant to walk this way, okay? Because
Sadhu, very good.
I was thinking about it just this afternoon.
Mm.
You know, when I first came to KL, I was almost alone in KL, except for a few friends. So being a reader, I love books, okay?
Yeah.
So I always read books. But those are not worthy to mention,
those
type of books.
Yeah.
So it's so much part of my life.
Mm.
So about 1 year before I joined Brother Teo, suddenly this urge to read totally disappeared, Brother Teo. Very strange, Brother Teo. It just disappeared.
Yeah.
No urge. It's like cold turkey.
Yeah.
It's so strange. And then after that, conditions come that I start to read certain type of books that lead to my spiritual path, Brother Teo.
Sadhu.
Just come, but it's all very, initially it started with books that are very liberal and all this, very light spiritual books.
Yeah.
And slowly it comes to conditions when I approach the Dharma. And then finally come up with that too. Looking back, I told myself, it shows me very clearly that I'm meant to walk this far.
Meant to be.
Make use of this, I'm very stupid now.
Sadhu.
When it has already shown me so clearly. And my pilgrimage to India and China has been even more clear to me.
Yeah, Sadhu.
I've already walked this path before.
What
am I waiting for?
Year after year
it goes.
I'm
no more spring chicken. So
I
use of this.
Correct. No more spring chicken.
If I don't make use of this, very stupid. Because it's not everybody who has the conditions to meet up with
the Dharma. The Dharma.
And especially a teacher. The true Dharma is so difficult to
come by. Come by.
Encounter. So I hope all of us take it seriously, put more effort to cultivate. And hopefully, may we all fulfill our vows and may all our noble aspirations be fulfilled.
Sadhu, very good.
I mean, hearing at all our kilometers who have moved very fast. The recent Alicia's talk. It was so inspiring.
Yes.
It can be seen that even when she has moved so much faster than us, she is still putting a lot of effort into
doing it. She takes it very seriously. That's why she can progress. She went through depression.
So I think all of us can do it, lah.
Yeah, definitely. Sadhu, fully agree.
Yeah. Encouragement from Bratio and all the kilometers. We can do it.
Sadhu. Definitely.
Thank you, Bratio.
Let us rejoice, Sadhu. Okay, now it's already 10:36. I think we can end. Thank you so much for the good sharing from LC and PG.